Hey, welcome to episode number 50 of This Amazing Life. My name is Ryan, and this is a very special episode. I'm so glad you decided to tune in, and if you know someone that you think this might be a good fit for, please consider sharing the content. In episode number 50, I have the great honor and privilege to interview a personal friend of mine. Her name is Dr. Marisa Weiss, and Marisa Weiss has a very lengthy list of accolades and titles because this lady gets after it, and she's out to help as many people as possible, and that is exactly why I wanted to highlight her on the show, This Amazing Life. Get comfy, and I really hope you enjoy my interview with Dr. Weiss. Hey, welcome back to the show. Again, my name is Ryan. Thanks so much for tuning into another edition of This Amazing Life. This is a very unique and rare opportunity for me to highlight somebody that I knew on a personal basis, but then lo and behold, after a conversation, I come to find out that this person has an amazing story, and that's why I wanted to have the opportunity to bring to you and to highlight Dr. Marisa Weiss, who is, gosh, I wrote down, we just had this conversation 30 seconds ago. What I wrote down for you is she's a doctor, author, researcher, nonprofit leader, and more importantly, what she would probably say is a mother. Her professional titles are Chief Medical Officer and Founder of BreastCancer.org, Director of Breast Radiation Oncology and Breast Health Outreach at Lankenau Medical Center, that's just outside of Philly, the Research Associate Professor at Lankenau Institute for Medical Research Studying Cannabis. Is there anything else that I could have possibly forgotten?
Well, I do have a husband, and I'm one of six children in a big, noisy family. But, you know, I know you personally, but I also know you professionally because you've been served as my trainer and, you know, my champion and trying to get me to, you know, rock out some moves and stay physically fit, which is what fuels the rest of my work. And if I didn't have that, I wouldn't be able to accomplish any of what I would do otherwise. And also, I wouldn't be as happy as I am.
That's so, a very generous compliment.
You.
You're very thank welcome. You. Yeah, so we are actually in one of the beautiful suburbs of Philly where the headquarters for BreastCancer.org is, and that's where we're doing our recording right now. So why don't we start there? What is your primary focus every day for BreastCancer.org? And then we'll build up the story to how we got here.
Right. Well, my professional life commitment is to help each individual confronted by breast cancer get the best care possible to protect her precious life, and not just her life, but her family. Because, you know, if you're diagnosed, of course, you worry about yourself, but you worry about what impact it has on your family. And so I accomplish that through multiple channels. So I'm have the honor of being a physician, an oncologist, a cancer doctor, taking care of women and men with breast cancer for 30 years now. And I I'm also founder and president and chief medical officer of BreastCancer.org. And we are number one in the world for medical expertise and support to 21 million individuals. And that is a big responsibility, and it's an honor to be called upon 24/7, 365 to help give people the answers they need so that they can know what to do and work with their doctors and nurses and other healthcare professionals to get the best care possible. And then we have this amazing community of support where people help each other because they've each been there, done that, have, you know, learned a lot along the way and have a lot to share with others who are about to make their way through their difficult journey.
When you wake up every day, that sounds like an unbelievable mantle that you have put upon yourself. Do you, when you wake up out of bed, do you have a sense of sometimes excitement or being overwhelmed, or do you wake up with a mantra in your head to keep everything in perspective? How do you start your day on the right foot with so much that you have your hands on? You're helping so many people.
Well, being a doctor and having people entrust their lives to you is an enormous responsibility. And I learned to be a responsible person by my upbringing, you know, one of six kids, and I was in charge of like making dinner every night or, you know, cleaning and doing the lawn and, you know, I always work through school, so, you know, I know what it's like to shoulder responsibility. But, you know, when someone entrusts their life to you, that's, of course, a whole other level of responsibility. And it's, you know, it's extremely gratifying, particularly because in the world of breast cancer, we have so many new advances to offer people to help protect their lives, whereas in the past, we had very few options. So I think, you know, it's exciting to be in a area of medicine where we have tremendous life-saving advances and also life-enhancing advances that we can offer people who've just gotten that phone call that, you know, they've been diagnosed. Either they felt something or it was a mammogram or they had a pain or a symptom, that kind of thing. But I have to say, it's not just when I wake up in the morning. It's also through the night.
Oh my gosh.
Because I get up multiple times at night and I'm worrying about somebody or another. And it's about, you know, calling that patient back, or was when I saw her last, she looked okay, but she looks still very worried. So now I'm worried about her. Or, you know, I answered some questions yesterday, but clearly she's going to have some more questions. And I'm concerned about the person who's about to have surgery that morning. I'm not a surgeon, I'm a breast radiation oncologist, but I'm wondering how the surgery's going. So it's hard to separate. But I have learned to do that over time. In that, you know, a life of taking care of women with breast cancer, both at Lankana Medical Center and here at breastcancer.org, our global headquarters in Ardmore, is, you know, all-consuming. And then about 5 years, actually 9.5 years ago, oh my goodness, I went for my own routine mammogram, and I got the call and found out that there was something they were worried about. Can you come on back in? We need to take extra pictures. So I experienced that same terror that my patients feel. Went into the hospital, got this checked out, that checked out, and then I was diagnosed with breast cancer myself. I never expected to have a free pass, you know, and avoid it. So I was not surprised that I would be diagnosed. But it is true that when you are diagnosed yourself, you really learn at the deepest level what's at stake. You know, your life's at stake. And for me, I have three children, and no one else wants to be their mother. So that's my job, my big job. And my husband, he'd find somebody else. He's a great guy. We had a very good relationship. But, you know, he would make his way. But those kids, you know, that I really needed to really look at the whole big picture, what's going, you know, the challenge to my life, the threat to my life, truly, and had to put on the big girl pants and make these very big decisions about treatment, from, you know, from diagnostics through genetics, through, that's genetics are when they test the genes you were born with. And then there was genomics, which are the genes in the cancer itself that help you direct your treatment course. And then there was, you know, the role of surgery, the role of chemo, the role of all those medicines of all kinds and radiation, like all those different things I had to make these big decisions in a short period of time. And that's when I developed a concept called a full life view, that for many patients who go to their doctor, all they focus on is the biopsy and, okay, we're just going to get you to surgery and we'll talk after that. But what I do when I meet a person for the first time is I always acknowledge them personally as a human being. And then I recognize the hard work they've done to get to see me that day. And then I stop and ask them, how can I be most helpful to you today? And listen to what they have to say. And that helps direct the conversation. Then I pull out a full life view diagram, which is basically a big arrow from left to right. And it starts with where we are that day. And it moves towards the future. And the idea is, the past is history. The future is just a promise for all of us. So I try to put the diagnosis in the context of their overall life, you know, that to be able to review it as a hump, you know, real big bumper, hump in the road kind of thing, a chapter in their book of life. And that, you know, it's a serious diagnosis, of course, but what we can do together to get you over the hump, to get you back to your, to a life that's worthwhile, meaningful, full of fun, spontaneous, you know, where you feel like you're going to do, be able to do what you want to do when you want to do it. Remain an independent person and keep rocking out the life you have between your personal life, your community life, and your work life. And that's called the full life view. So I put the diagnosis in the context of their overall life, and that immediately reassures them that they're not going to die right away. So a lot of anxiety just like evaporates, And that makes it much easier for them to hear what I have to say and ask questions. So by the end of my visit, they feel much more informed and supported and encouraged. And that just creates a much better doctor-patient relationship and a feeling of trust that is, you know, very precious and sacred, which is what it should be between a doctor and a patient, particularly when something so important is going on in your life. And so I developed that full life view approach when I went through my own diagnosis, knowing how much work and how hard the treatments are. And the only way you can sort of get committed to it is to realize that why you're doing it, it's a commitment, a sacrifice you're doing in order to get your life back and be able to remain the person that you want to be and become the person that you want to be in the future. And so I use it now with every patient. And it's been terrific. And I use this tool and I share this tool with nurse navigators and healthcare professionals who are looking for a method by which to make sure each person gets the best care possible, hopefully from the beginning. And you might think, oh, that sounds like a lot of work. Like that must take so much time to do all that with each patient. In fact, if you immediately connect with an individual and you immediately find out what's on their mind and how you can be most helpful to them that day, you're going to get more immediately to what's on their mind and how to be helpful. And you'll have a much more productive meeting in the same, maybe even the less time. Because if you go in with a little set spiel and you don't know who your audience is and you don't know what's really going on in their life, and you go through your whole thing and you think, oh, I'm done. And you get up to put your hand on the doorknob and you say, do you have any questions? And they go, yeah, I have about 15 questions. So in fact, you can do a better job in the same or less time if you really listen to what each individual that's sitting in front of you.
This perspective that you have of individual care, making sure you're listening instead of just reacting, such a beautiful personal touch with people that are struggling through something that's obviously very traumatic. Is this a mindset that you remember having growing up? Was this helpful nature that you have now? Or did it develop as you were going through school, as you became a mother, as you went through your own battle?
Well, I have always been a leader and have always been extroverted and energetic and also always led what I call a purposeful life, you know, and I'm from a family of public service. That's been the culture in which I've been raised, but I have, you know, evolved as a person and as a physician and as an educator and as an author, all these different roles I have over the years, always trying to embrace the new discoveries that could help each individual, always trying to figure out what are the unmet needs that we can solve for in innovative ways, and then to really embrace the advances that are happening very quickly in the field of medicine to make sure that each individual gets to benefit from them. Because it's great that if a new invention or advance, it helps mice in the laboratory, but what good is that if it doesn't come out, if we don't deliver the discoveries? So I've really committed my career to delivering the discoveries for each individual. And one of the things that's happened in the span of my career over 30 years is that there's no one size fits all. And each individual is so unique, much more than ever before, because think about it. There's the genes she's born with, the inherited genetics, which now we know so much more about. Then there are the genes inside the cancer called genomics. And that can really help us select the best treatments because we now have therapies that are called targeted therapies that actually target, let's say, a genetic alteration in the cancer itself. And that allows us to treat the cancer and minimize any side effects to the normal surrounding tissue. Then, of course, there's who you meet. She has other medical concerns or conditions. She has a belief system, a cultural background, you know, ethnic considerations. And she has a different, everyone has different educational background, religious background. Resources can be, you know, plentiful or very limited. Then who's her support network? Like, is she there alone or are there five people that she's bringing in and jamming into the same exam room? I mean, the range is enormous. So there's only one of each person I take care of. So it's really important to get to know each individual situation precisely so that you can tailor their treatment plan just for them. And in fact, every day in the hospital at Lanco Medical Center where I practice, I make really sure that we have all the information we need ahead of time to create the best treatment plan for her. So that means getting genetics. It means getting genomic information. It means consulting with other physicians, really understanding what she wants, what she's open to. You know, I have patients who are committed to complementary medicine or who were doing alternative medicine before they circled back to traditional medicine. I have people who only do traditional medicine. So there's a lot to get to know about each individual before you set your overall treatment plan. And unfortunately, too often I'll see someone who started their plan without the full information. Unfortunately, many stories of how I would see an individual, you know, a patient from China, for example, a young woman under 50 with what we call triple negative breast cancer, left her family in China just to come to have me treat her with breast radiation oncology to the breast for 4 weeks. And after having had limited surgery and chemotherapy over in Hong Kong, and I found out that she never had genetic testing, which was completely indicated in her situation because she was young and she had this type of cancer that's more likely to be inherited. And she was like, no, go ahead with radiation. Go ahead with radiation. I'm like, no. We're going to go ahead with the best treatment possible. I'm committed to that. So we stopped the train, as it were, got the genetic testing. Turns out she had one of those BRCA genes like what Angelina Jolie had, which meant that she had the wrong treatment from the beginning.
Wow.
She would have had mastectomies from the beginning, not limited surgery. She would have had a different combination of chemotherapy than what she got. Would never have had to leave China to come to the United States for her treatment. And had I gone ahead and given her radiation, I would have made it much more complicated later on in her life when she did need mastectomies for reconstruction. And so it was really, you know, it's very frustrating to see that, very upsetting as a doctor to see that. And so at breastcancer.org, we really make sure to help each individual find out what she needs to know to get the best care possible from the medical expertise on breastcancer.org, as well as the support from our community where people connect with each other. We are in English and in Spanish. We have about 200,000 conversations going 24/7 that we moderate, and making sure that breastcancer.org is a safe place where people can get the information and support that they need and share it, hopefully, with other people.
My next questions are going to be on behalf of the people that are too embarrassed to admit how little they know about breast cancer.
Yes.
How would you explain breast cancer to a third grader?
Yeah, well, you know, it's an interesting question because, in fact, awareness about breast cancer is very high. Like, everyone sees that pink ribbon and they go, oh yeah, breast cancer. But in fact, knowledge is dangerously low. And without knowledge, you can't prevent breast cancer effectively, and you can't be followed with a high level of surveillance, you know, and get the benefit of early detection. And you also can't get the best treatment possible. So we need to improve the knowledge gap that's out there. So what I would say to a third grader is that all parts of your body are made up of cells, little units that are supposed to grow and rest, and do the job of keeping you alive and healthy and running the show, right? And in the breast is not just a mound of fat. It is there's a gland in there that's job is to make milk in the lobules that drain out through pipes called ducts. And the cells that make up those lobules and ducts are supposed to be growing and resting and growing and resting, growing and resting in a regular way, just like, you know, the third grader would be going to, you know, getting up and going to school and then coming home and having a snack and then having dinner and playing with his friends, doing his homework and then going to sleep at night, you know, taking a bath, whatever. That's also true for breast cells. Normally they grow and rest. And it's the job of the genetics to control the growth and rest periods, as well as the repair, the operations of a cell. They're in charge. And if the genes are not doing their job right for whatever reason, you can get an uncontrolled growth of cells. So breast cancer, by definition, is an uncontrolled growth of cells that is always due to a genetic abnormality, but only about 5 to 10% of the time, only 5 to 10 out of 100 people will have inherited a gene abnormality from a mother or a father, like BRCA1, BRCA2, which are the names of the single high-risk genes that go along with a high risk of breast cancer. So they're only 5 to 10% of women with breast cancer have an inherited BRCA1, BRCA2, or a gene like it that's high, that puts you at high risk. And about another 15% of people may have a family history and may have inherited like a moderate risk gene, or maybe two small genes that together produce a moderate risk of breast cancer, and also other cancers too. A lot of these genes produce high risk of not just breast, but let's say ovarian or colon, pancreatic, melanoma, as examples, ovarian, fallopian tube cancers. So as I said, 5 to 10% will have one of these single high-risk genes, about 15% will have about a medium-risk gene, and about 75% of women with breast cancer have not inherited any gene that we know of. They got the gene abnormality through the wear and tear, stress and strain of living. Just living life, there were gene alterations that occurred through the wear and tear, stress and strain of living. And that gives us the opportunity to say, okay, well, what is that wear and tear, stress and strain? How can we minimize that so that we can reduce the incidence of breast cancer? We can lower the number of people who get this problem. And we can also reduce the risk that cancer could come back, recurrence. And if you've had breast cancer, you never want to see a new one again. Or if you've had breast cancer, you want to make sure that you do what you can to prevent an ovarian cancer if that's something you're at risk for. So we try to get this information to light the path and to make the best choices all along the way. And the thing about a breast cancer gene is that there's a lot we can do to lower your risk of your high risk of getting breast cancer in the course of your lifetime and figure out how to help you live a life that you'd want. If you want children or you want, you know, depending on what you want in your life and the sequence of things to plan it all out. Whereas I tell my patients, you know, if you showed up with a gene that meant that you had no sense of humor, I would say, oh, I am so sorry. That is an incurable and unbearable condition. And you're going to have to find another doctor. I am so sorry. But there's a lot we can do for people with a breast cancer gene. And if you take anybody out there with or without a gene, there's a lot they can do in their everyday to lower their risk. In fact, even if you start at age 50 and you take about 5 or 6 steps, you can drop your risk in half, 50% drop in risk. Those steps would be getting to and sticking to a healthy weight, regular exercise, you know, 3 to 4 hours a week, 5 to 7 is better, eating mostly a vegetarian diet, meaning that, you know, the different colors of the rainbow of fruits and vegetables, nuts, seeds, grains, spices. And if you have meat or poultry or pork, for example, you have it on a side, a small portion on the side as a side dish. You want to limit your alcohol use, a very unpopular step, but that means, you know, 3 or fewer drinks per week in general. You want to try to sleep well, because that takes care of all of you. And you also want to avoid smoking. And you want to limit the length of time that you're on extra hormones. So, for example, if you're on birth control pills as a young woman, as you know, when you're young, your risk of breast cancer is low. And as you get older, your risk goes up. When you're a young woman taking birth control pills, let's say 5 years, it's good contraception, and it does protect against ovarian cancer. But once you start going past 5 years on a birth control pills or a pellet or a hormonal IUD, your risk of breast cancer does go up from that medicine.
Is that for any particular age?
You know, so it's for anybody using it any time. However, the risk of breast cancer goes up over time because most breast cancers are due to the wear and tear, stress and strain of living, which is basically aging. So if you're a young person with, in general, you're an average young person, no known inherited genetic abnormality, for example, your risk of breast cancer is low. And if you take something like birth control pills, which increase the risk somewhat, like 12 to 25%, depending on the study you look at, then if you increase a low risk by a little bit, it doesn't add up to a lot for you individually. But across the population, it starts to add up since there are millions and millions of women who are on the birth control pill or taking something like that. Right. Then if you keep taking it over time as your risk goes up, now you're increasing a higher risk a little bit. Now you might start to see more risk in your own situation because your risk goes up because you're older. And now you're adding on top of that the birth control pills. So my advice generally is, you know, it's okay to be on it for 5 years when you're a young person and you need the convenience and you want to, you know, be with your friends and you're all taking it and your skin's better or whatever, your breasts are bigger, all the things that people like about it. But then after that, switch over to a non-hormonal type of contraception like a Paragard IUD. And regardless, pill or Paragard, you know, you need to use a barrier form of contraception to protect yourself against any STDs, of course. Right. So, and then there's hormone replacement therapy after menopause. That increases the risk of breast cancer. The longer you're on it, the higher the risk. And it's especially true for women who are taking the combination of estrogen and progestin. And, you know, transitions in life can be rocky, and going into menopause can be hard. Life is tough at that point. You know, you have a lot of responsibility at work. You may have teenage kids. And all of a sudden, your body is like not doing what it's supposed to do or you want it to do. So people are tempted to use hormone replacement therapy to give them back some of the energy, to give them better hair, to help them with sleep, with mood control, to help with vaginal dryness and libido, and et cetera. So, but my advice generally is to try to avoid taking hormone replacement therapy after menopause and try to be very careful in journaling the things about your life that aren't going so well and to try to have a solution for those things. Because, for example, exercise is enormously important to keep your bones strong, to keep your mood elevated, to keep you motivated at work, to keep keep your willpower strong, to follow a diet. You know, because when it comes to the five things that you can do to lower your risk of breast cancer by 50% starting at age 50, and those work for women and girls at any age, but that was just a factoid. The number one thing on the list is getting to and sticking to a healthy weight. That is really important because about 30% of breast cancers are due to being overweight because that extra fat makes extra hormones that can overstimulate breast cell growth. The extra fat leads to inflammation, which can really wear down your immune system. The extra fat makes you go into puberty earlier, which is a risk factor. And the extra fat can hold on to chemicals and pollutants in the environment that you take in your body from what goes in, on, and around you, what you eat, what you drink, what you breathe in, medicines you take. And it is held, your fat holds on to that stuff. It dissolves in fat. But what's really interesting is when you talk to women about getting to a healthier weight, they're like, okay, well, I guess I'll just do diet and exercise like I've always done. And I'm like, well, wait a minute. Tell me, what do you think that diet and exercise are equally important relative to your ability to manage your weight? And they're like, yeah, it's like 50-50. I'm like, well, actually, 80% of weight management is what you eat. 20% is exercise. For example, if you eat a piece of cheesecake, that can go right down the gullet in like a minute, right?
Right.
It would take you hours on the treadmill to you know, burn it off. But even though it's 80-20, when they look at what behavior, what is it that you can do to optimize your ability to stick to a good diet and to day after day, the hard work, where do you get that willpower to stick to it, because it's everyday hard work, and we all know that. And food, of course, is addictive. But what's the one thing you can do? Turns out it's exercise. That exercise on a regular basis is going to give you your best chance of sticking to your healthy life plan, your lifestyle. And so I, you know, always tell people, you know, you've got to make sure that if you want a long life and what I call the full life view, which again means that you get to do what you want to do when you want to do it, you want to live a long life full of wonderful things, it's meaningful, fun, joyous, and all that, and you want to be an independent person, you want to be able to take care of yourself. Well, for anybody, with or without breast cancer, anybody, you have to get to and stick to a healthy weight, exercise regularly, eat well, mostly vegetarian, limit alcohol, sleep well, stop smoking, and avoid extra hormones. And that's true for anybody. And what I tell people is that those steps, they've heard those steps throughout their whole life. They may even sound boring, but those steps are no longer optional. They become mandatory. And you don't ask yourself, am I going to the gym tonight? No, you are going to the gym tonight. The question is, what class are you taking or what exercise are you doing? You do not ask yourself that question. You are going. Now, you can ask yourself other questions like, what shoes am I going to wear? Is this blue blouse go with a white sweater or the jacket? Or am I going to eat that for dinner? Am I going to go call my friend tonight? Yeah, fine. Email her, call her, text her. I don't care. Do whatever you want as long as it's a good relationship. But when it comes to those steps, it's no longer optional. It's mandatory. And exercise is absolutely critical. It's on the list of what you must do each day. And even 7 minutes a day keeps your body moving and grooving. It's not enough, but at a minimum, you need to do 7 minutes a day to keep your engines fired up and your metabolism going.
The last two things I wanted to ask you about would be about the books that you did with your mother and your daughter, or talk about more of the technology. Is there one that you'd prefer to talk about more before we end with any info or updates that you want us to hit and make sure people know about breastcancer.org?
Right. Well, I am, honored to be a doctor. It is a sacred profession. And I am, committed to whichever way we can help each individual get the best care possible. So that's absolutely true at Lankana Medical Center, where I practice medicine, and at breastcancer.org, where we take care of literally 21 million people 24/7.
It's crazy.
Yeah. And each one of those people is unique. So what we're doing at breastcancer.org, and we need to raise money for this, is to go from one audience of 21 million, literally over to 21 million unique audiences for all the reasons I mentioned, which is why each person is so unique. There's no one size fits all. She needs to have her specific delivery of expertise and support for her own situation. So that's a huge technologic build to really embrace the new discoveries that each individual can benefit from. And then my books, Living Well Beyond Breast Cancer, is one that I did with my mother, who's a writer. And my other book, Taking Care of Your Quote Girls, A Breast Health Guide for Girls, Teens, and In-Betweens, which I did with my daughter, are very special ways that people can learn in an intimate way. They can curl up with a book and there's a lot of laughs, and mothers or fathers can share them with their kids. Because as a parent, your kid knows you're not the only source of information. They actually trust you more if you give them something or a resource or an expert in the subject in which you're asking for information. And so it's a great book to give someone as a gift to help them read up and prepare, do their homework before a visit. And of course, they can go to breastcancer.org for that. And the Taking Care of Your Girls book is amazing because our girls, think about it, how many women are taking care of our girls? 75% of girls out there have someone close to them who's been diagnosed, a mother, a best friend's mom, a grandmother, an aunt, a neighbor, a coach, etc. And when they're diagnosed, it makes them worried because they care about that person. They're dependent on that person, makes them worried. And the girls don't really have the dialogue skills yet or the maturity to know how to express their concern, fear, and ask a question. So they're usually experiencing this anxiety on their own. We didn't know about it. And then turns out 25% of girls have already had a breast cancer scare. I'm like, what? What we found out is because they hear all the messages that are out there aimed at adult women. Like if you feel a lump on one side, not the other, it could be breast cancer. And breast development often starts in an asymmetric way. You feel a lump on one side, not the other. And the girls are like, oh my God, I could have breast cancer. So we need to do a better job of keeping our girls informed. So that is the reason why we wrote the book, Taking Care of Your Girls. And that is why we go into schools throughout our area and across the country to educate girls 8 to 18 about breast health and how to set lifelong healthy habits to hopefully reduce their risk of ever seeing breast cancer. So it's our goal is to protect all generations and keep us all happy, healthy, and rocking out their full life view.
The last question I give is, what message would you give as a mother, as a breast cancer survivor, to somebody that thinks they're about to embark on this terrible journey? How would you encourage them and send them a message of love?
Yeah. Well, you know, I've certainly been there. I call myself the dual citizen. I'm a doctor and a patient. So I know what's at stake. I would just say your life, there's only one you. Your life is precious. You have time to make sure you get the right information before you start your comprehensive treatment plan. There's usually no emergency. Make sure you're seeing a team of doctors that specialize in breast health and breast cancer. Make sure you get along, that you can relate to them and that they're responsive to you and they take you seriously. But then you need to make sure that you're prepared for each visit with questions that you have and whatever concerns, and bring someone with you. Because when you're anxious, worried, confused, and overwhelmed, it's very hard to even hear what the doctor
taking
says.
Taking all the information.
Understand it, remember it, and then repeat it back to your family member when you come home. It's sort of like, I don't know. So that's where a lot of people come to breastcancer.org, you know, to learn what they need to know. But we try to help people get prepared. And when I see a patient, I go over their full life view. I go over the extent and nature of their cancer diagnosis, incorporating their pathology report, their imaging studies. And then I explain to them what's involved with the treatment, the benefits and side effects of the treatment that I provide, which is breast radiation oncology. And I give them a copy of what we go over together, so that they don't have to remember everything in front of me.
Any big events coming up for you guys? Because October is going to be a big month.
Yes. Yes. So we have Rock the Ribbon coming up in October. Just come to breastcancer.org events, okay. Rock the Ribbon. And we have events on a regular basis where you can come out and meet our team, lend your support. And also, if you care about other people who are facing this challenge, know that everything we provide is available at no cost. So if you're philanthropic or you want to give it forward, pay it forward, please consider making a donation to breastcancer.org.
Dr. Weiss, I could go on for hours asking you questions just about the technology, your experience. It's been a wonderful pleasure to highlight you, and I'm sure I will try my best to get you back here on the show again, appropriately, when your schedule permits it for me.
Yeah. Meanwhile, see you in class.
Yes. Thank
exercise
you so much.
Class.
Yeah, thank you. Once again, thank you so much for listening to this episode with my interview with Dr. Weiss. If you are interested, please consider supporting breastcancer.org in whatever manner you think is appropriate for you. If you are interested in checking out some of their events, or if you or someone that you know, a family member or a friend, needs some help, please consider going to their website. I will be sure to put a link in the show notes for you to click on if you are interested. That website is a vast, vast wealth of resources and information for people who might need the help. Dr. Weiss is an amazing human being, and I really appreciate you giving your time and attention to our conversation. Thanks so much for stopping by. I hope you have an amazing and a blessed day. Talk to you soon.